he had his experience.
Well, no, you said that when you came back after your
junior year was a rough year because so many things were happening. In my freshman year, or rather my sophomore year, we had a fight with a freshman, where you would kidnap various people and that sort of thing and hide them in a silo somewhere. It was really a rough evening. And a guy named Mouth disappeared, the freshman disappeared that evening. And he was never found. Not until 2 years later, when his skeleton was found under a pier in Lake Michigan in front of the Sigma Chi house. So that called for an investigation, and they had a grand jury called, and everybody in school, I mean in our class, was called out and had to testify. And they asked one of the football players, did you kill Mouse? And he said, yes, with my penknife. Of course, I didn't. But anyway, we spent a lot of time in Chicago on that sort of thing. And then when spring came along, that was always a distracting time for a young buck. Then back in the Christmas vacation, I'd come home to Beloit. And when I got back to school, the boys in the house were also interested about a place that they'd found on the north side of Chicago called the Wind Blew In. And it was just a nice little place, soft music playing, and music, and Prohibition times, and a few drinks. And Ron, we're going down there tonight, some of us, why don't you come along? And I said, oh, I can't do it. I'm going to earn $3 by collecting tickets at a Commerce dance. But I'll come down after the dance is over, after my duties are finished. So I got down there about 11:30 for this little dump on Ohio Street. And it was just as said, you know, somebody playing along. A bunch of boys sitting around the table, and lots of other tables there. One of the fellows is examining a scarab ring that one of the waitresses, the only two or three girls running the place. And he thought that was a marvelous scarab ring. And I was beginning to get into the spirit of the thing and having a good time, and these other fellows had been there for a couple of hours, and they were really in the spirit of the thing. When the door crashed open, and here was a bunch of Chicago's finest. Well, I was sitting next to Wally Knorr. He was a transfer from Harvard in junior year. And he had galoshes open and a coonskin coat and big as a house and a little inebriated. Well, along the North Shore, they'd been having a series of attacks on girls and so forth. And so every able-bodied young man from Evanston to Glencoe had been deputized and was wearing a badge. And Wally Clore had on such a badge, and he said, well, let's get out of here. I said, Wally, you're drunk. He said, come on, Ron. He grabbed me and pulled me along, but I'm the sort of fellow that is always in the back end of a queue, is that the word? No.
Yeah.
Queue?
Mm-hmm.
And as it spreads out, you know, the French Q, which is a sort of a triangle. Mm-hmm. And one man in the front, well, I'd be always on the outside. So I just wanted to go along with whatever was going on, and I thought that Wally was nobody to follow. So I pulled away from him, but he pushed into the kitchen and passed the a couple of gals that were running the place, and I was herded back. I went back at the crowd. Well, Wally looked around the kitchen and saw a window, and he went through the window. I was herded up with the rest of the patrons of this place. Now, these were all sorts of people. It was near a skating rink, an outdoor skating rink, and so there were people there with skates over their shoulders. There were old habitués. There were all sorts of people. But everybody.
Quite a few of your fraternity.
Yeah, I had a half a dozen of my fraternity and a bunch of guys that we got next to from the University of Chicago, and it was a general general sense of well-being. But we were all herded into three paddy wagons and taken to the North Chicago police station. Well, Wally, in the meantime, had died, had gone through this kitchen window and found himself on a cement, in the cement area. And he got to his feet and started feeling around, looking for a way out. And he didn't find any opening. Then he got down on his hands and knees and crawled around this area. Well, he found a little culvert deal. It was about 4 feet high, and he crawled through that, and he found himself out on the street. And then he got to the corner just in time to see Ron Dogan and Phil Newell and Ted Strelo and the other boys loaded onto the paddy wagon, and he just shaking his sides. He thought that was sort of wonderful. So he got over to Fullerton Avenue and walked up the middle of the street, because even in those days, Fullerton Avenue wasn't a street to be monkeyed with. And he got over the elevated and took the elevated back to Evanston and got in the fraternity house about 2 o'clock Sunday morning. And there was a bridge game going on. And he says, Ron and Phil and Ted and a couple of the other boys are down in the North Chicago station, I guess, because I saw them getting into the paddy wagons. And I imagine they need some money to get out and bail. Well, the boys looked at Wally, and he was sort of disheveled. And they says, Wally, you're drunk. So they took him up and put him to bed. So we weren't able to get in touch with anybody that could help us until early the next morning, early Sunday morning. And they set our bail at $50 apiece, and you can imagine how hard it would be to raise $50 apiece for half a dozen guys in the fraternity house Sunday morning. But they came down and got us out, and we returned to the house and tired and flopped into bed. I can remember being shoved into this cell, and we could have hardly standing room in the cell. But there's one guy got on the toilet seat, and he maintained his position. He'd been in there the Saturday before. He knew how valuable it was to have some place to sit. And another boy from Chicago was shaking the bars and yelling at the top of his voice, "Wait until my father hears about it. My father is so and so. He will have your hide." But that didn't do him any good. Well, when I got organized late Sunday morning, I telephoned my father, or telegraphed. We didn't telephone in those days. I telegraphed, and I said, by that time I'd seen the Chicago Tribune, whose headline was "Northwestern Booze Den Raided." And I told my father that in this telegram, Tribune story exaggerated.
Oh, did you send the telegram?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I had you telephoning.
No, I sent a telegram.
He telegraphs.
Don't believe all you read.
Don't believe all you read, or something to that effect.
He telegraphs the farm one day and tells them to telegram.
It was Sunday morning. Late Sunday morning.
He telegrams the farm one Sunday morning.
Well, you're going to have it on this thing as far as that's concerned.
I just want to correct it as I go. And tells Grandpa not to believe everything he reads in the Tribune.
Yeah. Well, I thought by that time I'd been in school a couple of years, and I thought everybody read the Tribune.
He goes and gets the Tribune and can't find anything in it he thinks Ronald means he shouldn't believe.
Well,
I like that line.
He drove downtown. I don't know if he drove down. Let's see, this is 1921 or something like that, 22. He probably had a car.
He drives to town and gets a Tribune, huh?
Tries to get a Tribune.
I should think Beloit in those days didn't have a Tribune too frequently.
No. There were Tribunes, though.
Well, did he finally get one?
He finally got a Tribune, but it was the Alice City edition, so there was absolutely nothing about this midnight raid in it.
We'll put it this way. He drives to town, and after some difficulty, manages to find a Tribune.
All right.
Okay.
But it was the early edition. And had nothing about this midnight raid, which made headlines in the local edition Sunday morning. Well, that's when I found the difference, because certain of the girls that I knew and the other boys knew, that's just what I expected of those guys. They are a bunch of bums. But another group of girls thought that we were okay and that we wouldn't do anything reprehensible. So that certainly separated the sheep from the goats, as far as I was concerned. I still remember a couple of the girls that thought Ron Doan is up to no good.
You had a group, weren't they, the Delagamas, or which ones were they?
I knew more Delagamas than anybody else.
That's a boast if I ever heard one. You knew more than anybody else.
I knew more Delagamas than members of any other sorority.
Oh, no, now you clarify it. Yeah. Mickey caught you on what you said, that you knew more Delagamas than anybody else.
I thought she meant that you were more.
You were the one who knew the most Delagamas of all your friends.
Okay.
Ron had told me that the mules usually together date with the girl together. They kind of, the two of them, the fraternity and the sorority were sort of in each other's pocket. Although there were plenty of other.
Well, that was a sad situation because we had to appear before the court on. This is on Sunday morning, and we had to appear before the judge on Tuesday. In the meantime, fathers of my friends had hired a lawyer, and the fathers and the lawyer, my father didn't get in on this, and the boys all got down there and into the court, and it was crowded. And the judge's bench had a whole line of liquor bottles, just the whole length of the bench. And the policeman charged that they found that. Not only that, they charged that it was the club was a rendezvous for homosexuals.
Okay.
It was pretty bad. When one charge was made, about homosexuality or liquor ring or something of that sort, one of the defendants made a tremendous laugh. Ha ha ha! Judge said $50. And then the papers were all there taking pictures. And the pictures that appeared in the Tribune on the following Wednesday showed these reputable citizens from Evansville surrounding places standing up straight before the judge. And the boys, some way or other, had their heads turned down. You couldn't identify a single one of them.
Oh,
the upright.
But fortunately, I did not have, they did not hold us. The judge threw us.
How did Grandpa avoid getting in on that?
Well, you wasn't called in. I mean, I probably contributed a little toward the lawyer's fee, but he didn't come in. He wasn't asked to come in. Well, I was cleared, as was the other boys. And then I was called into the dean's office. And if I had not been cleared, I would have been kicked out of Northwestern. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't have had an opportunity to meet Vera a year later.
That would have been awful.
It changed my life completely.
That would have been dreadful.
Well, that's a story the wind blew in.
How did they spell blue?
Huh?
How did they spell blue?
B-L-E-W?
You sure?
Because
I mean, I know these sort of places, and they spell them,
the
word. I'm just curious whether they
spell it B-L-U-E. B-L-U-E, then. I'm pretty sure. But I still think it was a rather nice place. I didn't have much time to sample it.
You said it was B-L-E-W.
Excuse me?
Well, don't you think it was? Yeah. Well, I thought he changed that to B-L-E-W.
Another. They, I've forgotten some of them aside from dating. There was, on this matter of blotters. I sold some of them on credit. I mean, I traded the commodity of the company to which I sold the blotter advertisement for their service, taxi cabs, lawyers, whatnot. So when I came to leave Northwestern, I had a lot of money tied up in credits, and so I had to spend a good deal of time using up my credit. long drives along the lake shore.
Nicky hasn't come back yet, and we're still...
long drives along the lake shore and flowers and various other things.
Well, he had three girls, 10.
Well, here's... I've already brought up that far. Here's where we are here.
Yeah. All right, don't have to go up this end.
Well, you always say you don't think I do, but then I
well,
do.
Well, the saddest thing, I mean, the thing that I regret as much as anything was that my father and mother came down to bring me back in the car at some break in the deal. My father was death on tobacco, liquor, of course. And I'd taken all my things out of the car and packed them in, and then I went back to my room, and somebody was in there, and I had suddenly started smoking 2 months before, a year before. But I sat down at my desk and started to smoke a cigarette, and Grandpa got tired of waiting, and he came up the stairs and found me smoking a cigarette, and that really put him into the dumps. That was truly... These fraternities...
Sad was the word he put up.
What?
Go on. These fraternity
these
stories.
These fraternity stories, everybody has them. And,
yeah, but yours are yours, and we should get Grandma's where she swallows the oysters on a string, too.
You never. You didn't.
I was being initiated.
And you had to swallow oysters.
And she had to sit in a closet on a shelf in a closet, and every so often open up the doors and say,
"That's funny."
I mean, they don't haze now the way they used to.
Oh, they used to have good hazing.
Wasn't Trevor, when he was in your fraternity, wasn't he the haze master? And didn't he have everybody naked on the floor and scatter corn, crack corn on them and let
well,
in a flock of
we did
hungry
that
chickens?
We did that too. The news got around.
That is Mickey.
Isn't that?
Starved the chickens for a while and they'd teeter around a bare belly looking around for something to grab.
Oh, those thoughts are horrible. I like your oysters better, I think. Why would we run strings?
So I could pull them up again.
Oh.
Think
about that one.
You a little sick, Mother?
Yeah, I almost changed my mind about joining her.
would.
Well, we got so mad, and we freshmen got so mad at each other. But toward the end of the week, when we'd get together in a restaurant or something, well, we would really pick fights with each other because we were so tired and exhausted.
And strung out from all the hardships you've been enduring. What was the one where you had to go up on the fire escape on your knees with a mouthful of water and water something?
We had to go down to the lake and
singing at the same time?
It's impossible.
Well, it sounded a bit gargly, I'm
sure. We had to go down.
All right, what was it you had to do? See, we've never recorded these before, Mickey and Dwayne.
We had to go down to the lake.
Do you have to
and get a mouthful of water, come back and climb fire escape 3 stories, all the time singing some praise to Delta Upsilon. Then run down the stairs 3 stories and spit the mouthful of water onto the fire.
In the fireplace?
In the fireplace.
Did you know one time to put the fire out that way?
Well, I remember that we really worked hard on putting out the fire.
Didn't you have to climb on your knees? I thought there was something to do with that.
I don't remember that.
While we're getting these down, quickly tell about the time you got shunted outside with nothing on.
Oh. Well, I was on the 3rd floor in what was previously been Edgar Bergen's room. Which I'm just throwing in a name dropper. But,
Northwest?
What?
Was it a nice room?
Oh, sure, as such rooms go. And I was up in the room naked, and somebody yelled from the lower floor, "Ron, telephone." And so without putting a rag on, I ran down the stairs, and as I passed the second floor landing, why, there's some brothers lined up, and they gave me a push, and so I went tearing down to the 1st floor where the phone was located, and there were boys lined up along there, and front door was open, and I was out on the highway.
They slammed the door behind you.
Slammed the door behind me.
Oh, that's awful.
Well,
how'd you get back in?
Well, there happened to be a tiger skin rug on the porch, and I draped that around me and skulked around the bushes for a couple of hours.
I'm Tarzan.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, here's what I've got next, Grandpa. See if I'm...
Freshmen are all lined up in front of the upper classroom in the evening, and we didn't know what to expect, and we were better than we could be. The Hayes Master said, "Well, now you grubs, or whatever they call it, class, you can have 5 minutes to do anything you please." I was looking down at the floor, and all I could see was these legs that come through. And the minute they said we were free to do anything we pleased, I made a dash across the room and grabbed the first pair of legs I came to and threw the guy down on the floor and rolled him around, and we had a free-for-all until they called it off. Well, I'd attacked the best dresser and the most tootish of any of the upperclassmen, and he was all dressed to go out on a date. And of course after that, I had to bend over and be paddled and so forth, but it was well worth it. Then when I was a Hayes Master, I think the most unique thing I did was to make the freshmen all use the one toilet. And after they used it, why, they would have to varnish the seat.
Oh, that's mean. Boy, I bet they took a long time, and there you go. That's pretty harmless.
They had to sit down? They were forced to sit down when they used the toilet?
Yep. Then we had a balustrade around our front porch, an open porch. You could throw bags of water from the 3rd story pop it out of some little party that was going on the front porch, but that's beside the point. During hazing week, I had the freshmen patrolling this balustrade. They'd walk all the way around the balustrade and stop at the corner and salute and say, a summons from the dean's office takes precedence to all academic work. And then they'd march back to the other corner and salute again and repeat the same phrase. After half an hour, we put another freshman on to do the same thing.
Six people go through to be in a fraternity.
Well, I look forward to it. I know a lot of fraternity men growing up here on the farm because we'd had students from the university coming down here to work for 6 months or so on special projects. And I heard all these stories about what had happened to them, and I could hardly wait to get into this college and have the same experience.
Well, I was a farm boy, and we didn't have as much chance to be in the social crowd downtown with the boys that lived in the city, and so. So he was coming down and getting his dates, and he said, he told me a lot about Northwestern. It really grew him up and gave him poise and gave him a different outlook on life.
He probably wouldn't have class enough to marry you, Mother, if he had gone to Northwestern.
He made some awfully good friends of nice people like the Tomlinsons and the Jewels and people that were really tough.
Are you insinuating that the people of Turtle Township are not top flight, Mother?
No, I'm not making any suggestion, but I mean that they were a social type that Ron had confirmed us at all.
Well, I didn't know anything about Rush. You know, the chap that had sponsored me and persuaded me to go to Northwestern was really a wheel on the campus, a senior, and I was all set to go to the University of Wisconsin, and I had my room engaged and so forth. But this guy persuaded me that Northwestern was the place to go, and I can still can't understand how my father went along with the idea, but he allowed me to go to Northwestern.
Well,
in the house for 2 or 3 days, and then they got me in the room and suggested that I pledge, or urged me to pledge, and it all came as such a surprise to me that I hesitated, and well, why not? And I said, well, one of the men that had already pledged, I didn't think so much of him. Why don't you? He says, well, all this afternoon he was standing on his head in the Davenport.
Well,
they said that they'd never open a pledge again, and so I went out of the room rather disconsolate because I had really no reason for not pledging. And this grand spray met me outside the room shortly, and he said, well, don't do anything rash, Ron. Let this thing ride for a day or two. That night I went to a smoker at the SAE house, and everything was broiling around in there, and every time a brother would get a hold of me, why, he would take me over to the scrapbook and show me pictures of Paddy Driscoll, who was a great athlete and has been a great athlete over the years until he died. I mean, he's been in national athletics and football and so forth. But I got so darn tired of Paddy Driscoll, so when they tried to fetch me, but I turned them down. Eventually, I went back to DU. But Norm Norris, this guy who was standing on his head, wasn't such a bad guy after all.
Was he doing it because they told him to?
No, no, he was
just doing it. He just did it?
Huh. Well, the things they made us do during this rushing period.
Yoga has to stand up.
Yeah, but yoga, I don't know if they would have known anything about it back then.
Oh,
what?
He wouldn't have been doing yoga back then, would he?
No, no, he just had my head for the hell of it. Well, one thing that I had to do was to go get 2 pounds of horse shit.
What for?
I had to get 2 pounds of horse shit, and that'd be exactly 2 pounds. Well, so I went out and around, and I finally found a stable and got a paper bag full of horse shit, and I had no way to weigh it because it had to be exactly 2 pounds. So I came back into the town and went into a drugstore and had him weigh this bag on my scales, and it was about 2 1/4 pounds. So I went out on the street and scraped out a little bit. Went back at the drugstore and had to weigh him again.
Yucky.
Well, then I took it back to Trinity House, and that was okay. And they told me, somebody told me to put it on the hearth. So I put it on the hearth and sat there for a day or so. Then I was in the house and an upper class was there, and he says, "Ron, go over and put your hand in that bag and tell me what you find." And I'd forgotten all about the bag, and I reached into the bag and I said, "Horse shit." So they took me out to a big pot.
Here's Daddy on Mike Hickey's in the snipe hunt.
They took me out to the edge of town and told me about the snipes, and that they would go out and beat the bushes, and I was going to hold a bag there, and a little arrangement that fixed up so the snipe would run into the bag. And cold night. And I sat there holding the bag for a while, and about 5 minutes I realized I'd been taken. And so here I was, way away from any transportation, and I didn't have a nickel in my pocket. But this Mike Hickey has been kind enough to loan me a pair of fur-lined gloves. So I walked over to the first street that I could find, and here was a guy coming by on a bicycle, and I stopped him, and I asked him if he'd give me a dime for this pair of gloves. So I traded Mike Hickey's gloves for a dime, and then took the elevator out to Evans at the house before my tormentors had arrived.
What did he say about the gloves?
Nothing was ever said about the gloves.
Wow.